Is the mic on?
Good.
Okay.
All yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Catherine Adamack. I'm the Director for Services for Catholic Charities right here in Summit County. On behalf of the Board of First Friday Club of Akron, I welcome you to our presentation today. Welcome to Tangiers. Our topic for today is Stories from the Battered Women's Shelter with Terry Heckman as our speaker. Please silence your cell phones so that we can all enjoy today's program. On your tables, you will find white cards on which you can write down questions for our speaker. After the talk, we will have a short announcement break to collect those cards and then have a question and answer section. At this time, I'd like to introduce Kate Sass, who works for Adult Protective Services, to offer the opening prayer.
God has created me to do him some definite service. He has committed some work to me, which he has not committed to another. I have a mission. I may never know what in this life, but I shall be told it in the next. I have a part in a great work. I am a link in a chain, a bond of connection between persons. I shall do good. I shall do his works. I shall be an instrument of peace. Amen.
At this time, it's my pleasure to introduce Father Stephen Bernofsky from St. Hilary's to introduce our keynote speaker for the day.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's my privilege to introduce to you this afternoon Terry Heckman, who is the director of the Battered Women's Shelter and Rape Crisis Center here in Summit County for the past 20 years. Growing up in Fairlawn, Terry attended St. Hilary Grade School, Copley High School, and the University of Akron. Her professional career began in 1984 when she completed her social work studies at the University of Akron, and began her professional career at the Victims Assistance Program, working under the guiding hand of Reverend Bob Denton. As her skills grew, she took on her own program as director of the YWCA's Rape Crisis Center from 1986 to 1995. It was during this time that Terry's dynamic speaking abilities and writing skills caught the eye of countless local and state groups as she became a notable presenter and publisher on the topics of child abuse, rape, elder abuse, and the prevention of date rape. In 1995, Terry accepted a new challenge, moving to the position of CEO at the Battered Women's Shelter of Summit and Medina Counties. In 2005, when the YWCA of Summit County permanently closed their doors, Terry once again stepped up to the plate and became the leader needed for the Rape Crisis Program. Some of Terry's awards include the Distinguished Service Award from the Akron JCs, the Howard K. Stubbs Humanitarian Award, the Distinguished Service Award from the Akron Kiwanis, and the Liberty Bell Award given by the Akron Bar Association to a member of our community who exemplifies a commitment to improving services to victims of crime. Terry's current and biggest challenge and professional thrill is the renovation and formation of a state-of-the-art center known as the Center of Hope and Healing, which I'm sure she will spend much time speaking about with us this afternoon. So it is my privilege and pleasure to introduce to you our parishioner at St. Hilary's and a wonderful, wonderful asset to our Akron and Summit County communities, Terry Heckman.
Good afternoon. I am going to fly through a presentation for you today. If you cannot, maybe I can move this back. Am I going to wreck anything? Because I want these people to be able to see. What? Am I doing a good thing? Yeah. I'll see you later. Hi, How's that? Now can you see? I promise you, I'm okay. All right, so I'm going to move quickly today so that we have time for questions at the end if you would like. I'm going to combine a little bit today of me and then my profession. Where did it all begin? Well, that's where it began. That's my mom and dad on the steps of St. Hilary's. They were founding members of that parish. We lived a couple houses away from St. Hilary's. We had priests at our house all the time, all the time. We were blessed almost every single night going up to bed. So we had a very Irish Catholic, close-knit family my whole life. I was very, very blessed. I think my mom thought this is where it would end. This was Halloween, and it never went too much further than that, but I was very close to the Sisters of St. Dominic my whole life. I spent a lot of Saturdays down in their basement counting out hosts for the different parishes, going grocery shopping, even went to Europe with Sister Charlotte in my eighth grade year of school, so I had a lot of experience down at the Elms. As Father said, my education went through Copley, local, and then Akron U. My spiritual growth, I think, really, my parents planted the seed, or God planted the seed, my parents watered it, and I think the search program really lit it on fire. For me, the search program really touched my heart and burned in me a sense of wanting to live my life in service for other people. My life values have always been this. And every single morning on my way to work, I say to myself, I hope that I see things today through his eyes. I hear things today with his ears. I speak with his words and I love with his heart. And it's always been a real quick and easy prayer for me to say. So throughout my life, that's where everything has been grounded. I was asked at St. Sebastian's once to write a talk about a calling, and I said this song that we all sing in church really touched me, and that I remember saying, God, take me. It's yours to do. You gave me skills. You gave me a marvelous family. You gave me wonderful roots, but now here I am. Where do you want me to go, and what do you want me to do? And that path kept me really in the victim movement. My internship from Akron U was at Victim Assistance, where I worked with victims of all crimes. Then I ended up running the Rape Crisis Center, a victim program of the YWCA. Then I was asked to move to the Battered Women's Shelter, and then when the YWCA went out of business, I was asked to take over both organizations together. So now running the Battered Women's Shelter and the Rape Crisis Center. Why I ended up in the victim movement and helping victims, I've never been a victim. Thank God, there but for the grace of God, any of us could be. But my calling has been to help those victims. So let's talk about domestic violence for a little bit. What are the myths? What are we hearing about? A lot of times we hear alcohol causes abuse. No, it doesn't. You can have sober people abusing each other just like you can have alcohol. It's fuel for the fire. There's no doubt about it. But it doesn't cause abuse. It doesn't happen to men. Sure it does. We get male victims approximately once a month. We are renting a hotel room right now because we don't have a facility to put male victims into. The new shelter, which is called the Center for Hope and Healing, will have rooms for male victims, and men will be able to come there and stay. Most recently, we had to rent a hotel room up on 303, put a gentleman into a hotel room that his wife had poured hot oil on him while he was sleeping. People will make jokes about male victims, and they'll, you know, act like, oh, he must be a sissy if he's being abused by his wife. No, he's not. These are very brave men who don't fight back. They don't hit back. They want to be a good man, and they're trying to be a good man, but they end up abused, and they don't talk to anyone. Men don't talk to anyone. Women know, I can talk to my college roommate, I can talk to my sister, I can call my mother, I can call someone else. Men don't. They keep it all inside, and they're hurting very, very badly, and all they want to do is put their family back together and keep it healthy. It doesn't happen very often. Well, let's look at some statistics. You know what? I can't see this. I'm in trouble, huh? All right. There's 1,894 shelter programs in the country that they were able to identify. 1,700 participated in this following survey that was done. in one day, 71,800 victims served domestic violence in our country. 40,000 people were living in one of the shelters that night. 40,000 people living in a shelter. Over 21,000 of those were kids. Those are little kids who did nothing wrong, forced to live in a shelter. 5,000 people were not able to get into shelters because the beds were full. In Summit County, we have a philosophy of nobody is left out. So if, in fact, we are full, and we currently have 68 beds in Summit County, the new shelter will have 150. But if, in fact, on any given night, more people call, they will go on couches, they will go on blow-up mattresses. If someone's really in danger, they don't care where they're going that night. They just need to be kept safe until the morning when we can help figure out, all right, where can we put all these people so that they can begin to look at their lives. Another 31,000 received other types of services. They might have been coming to support groups. They might have gone to court that day to seek a protection order and to get some help. And another 21,000, is it on there? 21,000 called hotlines. Didn't want to come into shelters, didn't want to go to court yet, didn't want to go to a support group yet, but they were beginning their process to say, I need help, or my family needs help. And if any of you want, because I'm going to continue to use this, to walk to those back tables, you're more than welcome if it would help you see better. Okay. All right, what types of abuse are we looking at? What types of abuse are we seeing? Well, definitely, most people think about physical. Physical abuse is what shows up in the courts the most. It's what shows up on NCIS and Dr. Phil. And everyone in the field almost likes when you get a physical abuse case because no one doubts it. Everyone sees... Thank you. Everyone sees the unfortunate black eye or marks. But what about the other types? Emotional. People don't see that, and they say it hurts more than the physical often. When you have been pushed down and pushed down and pushed down emotionally for so long that the scars are there. Sexual abuse often goes hand in hand with other types of abuse, but people don't talk about it. It's the most hidden of all the abuses. Financial abuse. I can't tell you how many people come into shelter, and when we start talking to them about their money, they say, I've got none. Everything's in the other person's name. And it wasn't done initially out of a threat. It was done out of a, I'll take care of the money. You don't need to ever worry about it. But when you get yourself in a position of wanting to leave a family or leave a situation, you can't do it because you have nothing. You have no credit. You have no history of financial stability. Some of these people actually, their paychecks actually get deposited into the abuser's account. You don't get any money to go anywhere, to do any grocery shopping. And I can stand back, and from that first picture where you saw my family, I can say, how does that happen? How does a family get to that point? It's usually very slow. It's very slow over a period of time. None of these abuses happen overnight. If I were to say that a young couple is going out on a date, and on the first date, one of them abuses the other one, they probably aren't going on a second date. These are long, slow erosions of a relationship. And it takes a long time to change those to be healthy relationships again. These things don't happen overnight. If it took you 3 years to get unhealthy, it can take you that long to get unhealthy. Right now, I'm trying to lose weight. I want to lose it in 2 days, but it took me 20 years to gain it. It's the same thing in these relationships. It takes time, energy, work. Oh, let's go back for a second. And spiritual abuse. A lot of the people who come into shelter talk about spiritual, not only religious spiritual, but just who you are as a person, what you believe in, what your values are, being told that those aren't important, that those don't mean anything your whole life. It's just been taken away. Our shelter currently is right across the street from a Catholic church. the staff don't necessarily promote religion, but it's amazing to watch how many people walk over there of all different religious backgrounds and just sit in the church, and I'm sure think and talk to themselves about how did I get to this point and how am I going to move away from it. So there's a real spiritual void in these people's lives of what can I hang on to when things get hard. We all have that. Even if we don't turn to it every day, when something tragic happens in your life, you do turn and hang on to your spirituality that you've built for a long time. These people haven't built it for a long time, so it's a void for them. You may have heard about the cycle of violence. It is very, very real. It happens over and over and over again. And basically, we've all been through a cycle in our relationships. If you can think back to a really good relationship you had in life, excuse me, there are times that you get in arguments. There are times that things are tense. There are times that there are explosions. And sometimes explosions are silent. You just don't talk to your partner for a day, an hour, whatever it is. But it happens in all of our relationships. Think it's often easy to think about when either you can remember one of your teenagers and they're all in love with someone, right? And then something happens and an explosion happens. They get in a fight. You hear, probably through the grapevine, that they broke up, right? They're ripping up his picture. They're throwing away the stuffed animal he won for them at the carnival. And 2 days later, they're out in the trash looking for the picture, taping it back together. That's called the honeymoon stage. People go through a period of time where things are going great in life. And then for whatever reason, stress builds. Some type of explosion happens, and then a honeymoon stage happens. You can apply this to anything. Think back when you had a small child. Everything's great. You love your child. You're hugging your child. And then you walk into the family room, and you see that they colored all over the wall. If they were there at that moment, there might be some yelling. Go up to your room. Go. That's a separation period. And then eventually somebody throws a note down the stairs. I'm sorry, Mom. I didn't mean it. And that's the honeymoon stage. It happens in all relationships. So the cycle is not unique to domestic violence. But the domestic violence fits right into the cycle. A couple is getting along pretty well. Maybe they get into financial trouble. Maybe something happens with some of their children. Maybe something happens with their parents, their in-laws, that causes additional stress on the relationship. They don't have the coping skills to deal with it. The stress ends up being yelling at each other or, God forbid, hitting each other. I hate you. I'm leaving you. I'm never coming back. The next day, I've got flowers at my door. Let's go out to eat. Let's talk about it. Well, you love 99% of most people, or let's say 95. Most of us, you don't wake up and look at your spouse and love 100% of them sometimes, right? You wake up and you go, oh, you're just like my parents. When did you become this person? There's some of it that you think, I can deal with that because I love 95%. Well, their 5% could be abuse. And they're thinking, but I love 95% of everything else they do. Do you leave somebody for 5%? That's what these people are thinking. For us on the outside, for people who grew up in healthy relationships, you hit me, I'm gone. For people who didn't grow up healthy, that's a decision they have to make. Should I leave just because of this one time that maybe he overreacted? And many times they don't leave. And we want them to on the outside, but you don't leave till you're ready. So this cycle will repeat itself over and over and over again. And you know what doesn't play into this is the courts. Because at what point do you think you're going to court? If the police show up at your house tonight, you're mad, you say, or your neighbors called the police, here's what happened, we got in a fight, yes, I got hit, a police report is made. When do you go to court? During the honeymoon stage. Weeks later, this couple has already met, gone out to dinner, talked about their kids, talked about going to counseling. They're already going back together by the time we get them in court and say, does something need to be done to stop the abuse? So our system response doesn't necessarily match what's happening. What about a continuum of abuse? Every time it happens, it has the tendency to get a little worse. So if this first time we get in an argument over something and I'm walking to the kitchen after dinner and he trips me, I think to myself, or I turn around and even say, did you trip me? Did you trip me on purpose? No, I didn't trip you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. Did he trip me? I don't know. Are we in that first one? Now the next time the fight happens, you know what, I get pushed up against the wall. I say, don't you ever push me up against the wall again. Don't you ever do that. Maybe the third time, I get pushed up against the wall with my hand here. It begins to escalate as time goes on. And this can be every week for 6 weeks. This could be once a year for 6 years. We don't know when the cycle is going to repeat itself. But we do know, and it shows, and the families in shelter will tell us, that it does escalate over time. Does not just get better. And once somebody treats you a certain level, your boundary has moved for how you accept them treating you. You know, it moves each time until it is stopped. Until somebody says, no more. I will not be treated this way. That's the only thing. But if we continue to forgive and forget and go back and no new skills are learned, it's going to continue. The time. People leave. People leave relationships. When you're mad at somebody, you might separate. You might, I'm going to bed. I don't want to have anything to do with you tonight. We'll talk about it in the morning. And you don't have to shake your heads and you don't have to raise your hand, but you all know if you've been there. Or maybe it's just an hour. Or maybe you take your purse, hey, I'm going shopping. You just need some time. I'm going to church. I've worked with people from affluent areas who say, I'm just going to the summer home. I'll be back in a couple weeks. If we all had a summer home, it'd be a beautiful way to handle relationships. But this separation grows. As the abuse grows, as the cycle of violence happens, the time you're away. So it might be an hour first, 2 hours, 3 hours, a full day. You might go spend the night at your sister's. And you might not even tell your sister why you're spending the night there. But the time that you're apart also grows. So what this means is that most people don't come to a battered women's shelter till almost the seventh time that cycle has happened. By then it has escalated to a pretty severe physical abuse. Where do people go for help? The first place all of us go for help, ourselves. When we have a problem, it is natural to try to figure out what to do by ourselves. Secondly, we go to the media. We watch, it used to be, Oprah and, what was his name that married Marlo Thomas? Phil Donahue, right? We could watch that. Could learn all these kinds of things on TV by listening to people. And then you try to apply them. And it happens for everything. If you believe that somebody in your family has been diagnosed with something and you find out that the doctor's is presenting a whole hour on it, you're going to watch it. So we do turn to the media to try to figure things out. Then we go to our family. It's very hard to go to your family and tell them about your family and that something like abuse is happening in your family. But by the time I go to my family, it's probably the third time. By the time it's the third time and I start talking about it, some families say, well, if it happened three times, why are you still there? Why haven't you left? We almost start blaming the victim before we even listen to the story. Or what if the abuser said to me, you can go tell your family. I started talking to them 2 years ago. I told them you're crazy. I told them you're seeing a psychiatrist. I told them you're on drugs. I told them you've stole all the money from our account. I asked them to keep it quiet, to just support me. So they're going to think you're nuts if you go there. Maybe none of that's true. But you could have already been set up to be a failure when you go talk to your family. It's incredible the manipulation that happens. What about the other way? You can go talk to your family. Go right ahead. I will kill all of you tonight. You go talk to your family, I'll kill y'all. Go ahead. How many of you would risk saying, okay, I'm going? We don't go. If someone threatens our family or as a mother, all you gotta do is threaten your kids. You'll pretty much try to find another way. We talk to friends. A lot of people will talk to friends, and you know, when it comes down to domestic violence, you get about one chance to talk to your friends, and then they get sick of it. They'll listen, but they expect you, because they're thinking in a healthy way, just get out. Just get out. And then when you don't, or when you go through that cycle, and they don't understand that cycle, they get frustrated with you, and you end up really not having many friends in the end. Then we go to known community support systems. your known community support systems, your priest, your doctor, those types of people. Now it's been happening 4 or 5 times. These people are wishing you came to them on the first time. But we work our way through the helping system until we get to the unknown community support system. And the unknown would be the shelter. Once again, the experts in domestic violence don't get involved until you are really deep into this cycle and into this very messy family relationship that has really degenerated over time. We're not putting people back together who have been through a one-time experience. It's been going on. 7 times is the average for people to leave a relationship, to be abused, before they end up calling a hotline or going to a shelter. So who are the victims? Everyone. Men, women, children, old, young, black, white, Christian, Jewish, employed, unemployed. We see every type of victim, but victims handle their abuse differently, so it doesn't show up in your statistics as much. A person with money can go to a private counselor at $150 an hour. A person with money can go to the Holiday Inn tonight and not stay at home if a big fight has happened. So our shelters end up with people who look lower income, and so that's what our statistics show, but it is not true. I have worked with people from every single part of this community. I have been in homes in Jackson that are like $600,000 homes with not one piece of furniture because the family extended themselves too far on the purchase of the house. They don't have any furniture. Stress is built in their family. Abuse has been happening. So it happens everywhere. People just handle it differently, and so are sometimes you'll hear statistics that sound skewed, but they shouldn't be. It's an equal opportunity victimization. What about the victim? We see people who we call the blind. They just don't understand that it's abuse. Right now we're seeing this in the population that's moving here from other countries, your non-English speaking people. We try to do education at the International Institute, and it's really hard to help these people understand who are coming from different cultures that it is not right to hit your spouse when they have been brought up in a culture that tells them that is how you control your family. So sometimes people just don't see it and don't understand it's abuse. What about if I'm worthless? I believe no one else will ever love me. I just got to put up with this maybe one time a year and I'll be okay. I deserved it. I'll do better the next time. I caused the fight. I've had women say to me, I kind of did cause the fight, and I'll say, why? Well, I could tell he was getting very upset. He was doing the bills. His temper was starting to rise. I've seen this cycle before. So I told the kids that they were going out with my brother to play putt-putt or something, and I knew I had a little window of opportunity. And if I could make the explosion happen during that moment, it would be over. We'd get into the honeymoon stage. And I'm sitting there thinking, you're kidding me. You planned out this much to protect your kids from seeing it, to get it over with, so they do feel like they caused it then. They pushed the buttons, they said the wrong thing to upset the abuser. What about a manager? I can keep it from happening again. I can control this situation. You get that even from kids who are dating and say to us, hey, we're just dating, but I think I can change him. I think I can work with him and we'll be okay. This is the only one thing that he does wrong. You're not going to manage anybody. He's really sorry. He told me he's sorry. He bought me flowers. He bought me a present. It'll never happen again. I'm just gullible. I know I make him sound terrible, but he really is a good guy. I will tell you 90% of the women in shelter say he is a good dad. He is a good dad. No good dad hits a mom. So that's a terrible argument right there. But people, especially people who have come from broken families, will work very hard. Dysfunctional broken families will work very hard to keep their family together. They want their kids to have something they did not have. I believe people can live in single relationships as single parents. They can live as separated couples. Very, very healthy. So there's no, I'm a single parent on here. There's no excuse for that. Which one's that? He didn't mean to hurt me. He didn't mean it. He was mad that I burned the dinner. He threw the pot, but he never meant to hit me. It just happened to hit me. You defend him. I've heard people in court defending the person. No one else understands him. He said if I leave him, he said if I report this, he's going to kill himself. I have to take care of him. He grew up in a terrible family. It's up to me. I'm the only one who loves him. Same thing. I love him. He isn't hurting the children. I think he would hurt him if I left, so I need to stay with him. And I can't support the kids on my own. I cannot do this by myself. I've got to stay with them. Hopeless. He's going to kill me. He will kill me. I had a woman call the shelter once and she said, I don't want to come to shelter, but I want you to document this because he is going to kill me. And when he kills me, I want you guys to have it documented. And I said, why can't you come to shelter? Why can't you come here? And she said, he's a big shot in Akron. And if I told you his name, everyone would know it. And I don't want to embarrass the family. I said, embarrass the family? When he kills you and it's on the front page of the paper, you're not thinking clearly. If he's going to kill you, let's get you out of it. But you will hear people say, I just can't. I just, financially, I can't do it. I'm not, emotionally, I'm not strong enough. I just can't leave. All right, for a minute, when we're talking about victims, let's talk about the perfect storm, because there is something happening out there that's the perfect storm in the world of domestic violence, and it's called elder abuse. I will leave my position, in 5-6 years, hopefully when I retire. This elder abuse situation is going to be something we are all going to hear about for the next 15 years, and it's not going to be pretty. And it's all because of a few factors. First of all, let's talk about the abuse. Physical abuse, hurting a senior citizen. Sexual abuse has been happening. We read about it once in a while in nursing homes, but it happens to senior citizens. Exploitation, fraud, misuse. I'm controlling your money. I'll do what I want with it. It's happening. Emotional abuse. Verbal attacks on a senior citizen, calling them names, yelling at them because they can't take care of themselves anymore. It's happening. Abandonment. Leaving someone alone, not visiting them, not going over. Neglect. Putting a senior citizen in a place that they can't even get to. I worked with a gentleman, as a matter of fact, Kate and I worked with a gentleman who was living on the second floor of an apartment, and he was in a wheelchair. And actually, he had to take a taxi home from the hospital because his family didn't even take him. The taxi driver called us and said, I'm not helping him up to his apartment. And I believe when we got the call, the taxi driver said, I didn't even bring a wheelchair for him. It's up in his apartment. So when we got there, there was a man with no legs, both amputee, just let out of a taxi, supposed to get up to the second floor of an apartment. Where's their family? What is going on in this world that a hospital would even let someone leave like that? Didn't make any sense. For every report of abuse, 25 elder abuse cases go unreported. Senior citizens, 1/3 of the population. Look what's happening because of the baby boomers. And some of you might not be able to see that, but those were when the baby boomers were born. Well, if you just slide that scale up 60 years, you can assume that the baby boomers are all starting to become senior citizens now. 56,000 people in Summit County are over the age of 60. 81,000 are between 40 and 60. Look how many more are going to become senior citizens in the next few years. We're also living longer. Whoops. Oh, our state has the 7th largest 60 plus in the nation. Ohio has the 7th largest. We're also living longer. So if there's more senior citizens and they're living longer, all right, start to add this together. Look at this chart here. Does this come out? Okay, good. Look at there. So 1960... we had some 85-year-olds, some 65-year-olds. Look what that's going to be.
Look how that's going to change in the years to come. 85-year-olds in 2050, 65-year-olds in 2050.
There are going to be a lot of senior citizens, much more than we're ready for. And when you apply the abuse and who's taking care of those people, so we've got more senior citizens, we've got senior citizens living longer, and your needs change. As I become older, my needs are going to change. I'm going to need someone to help me take care of my money a little bit more. I'm going to need somebody to mow my lawn, which means I have to pay them. So is that person going to take advantage of me when I say, I don't have any cash today? Well, ma'am, why don't you just give me your credit card number? I'll run your credit card. These things happen this quick. How many of you who are over the age of 65 have received a phone call that you think is a prank and you don't want to give them your information, right? These people are calling everyone all the time trying to get this information. More people, living longer, needs changing. This one here shows when you're 85 or older, 50% of us will need some type of support. It's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. But it just shows that we're going to be in much vulnerable situations than we used to be. By the time you're 95, you have a very high chance of having some level of Alzheimer's. You're going to need some help. Not a bad thing. A little bit of help, you can stay, you know, independent for a long time, but you're going to need some help. Makes you vulnerable. Plus the fact that many senior citizens grew up where you didn't call a hotline. You didn't talk about your family problems in public. You didn't go for help. You wouldn't call somebody and tell them your son is hurting you. We had an 81-year-old lady in shelter. Her son broke her leg by pushing her down. She broke her leg when she got pushed down. Let me put it that way. Maybe he didn't mean to do it. Got frustrated with her, pushed her down, broke her leg. She ends up in shelter. The first thing out of her mouth, I want to go home. I just want to go home. He said he's going to put me in a nursing home and he's never going to see me again. I just want to go home. That's all she wanted. She didn't want to be in a shelter. Many senior citizens don't even know that services exist. How would you know to call someplace if you don't even know if it's out there? Some seniors might not mentally or physically be able to do it. I've seen police officers talk to senior citizens who are abuse victims, black eye, teeth out, and they say, I think I fell. I think I just fell down. They might not even be able to be their own advocate. Who abuses them? Look at that chart. If you can't see it, number one, in green here, 32% of the time, a son. Again, I don't want you to think that, oh, you know, I'm blaming and saying all sons are bad. I'm saying by the time dad is 91 and needing a lot of care and the caretaker gets frustrated because I have to care for this person, abuse can happen. It can happen very quickly. Our caretakers are tired. Son, daughter, other relative, spouse, not even neighbor and friend until way down here. But I also know that geographically things are changing. You don't always live close to your family like you used to. So I think we're going to be cared for by people we might not even know. Number one question I get, why do victims stay? Victims stay for a lot of reasons in relationships. Number one is children. Number two is money. Those are the two things we hear why people believe they should stay and work it out. And we don't advocate any one way of leaving, I'll tell you that. People can come to shelter, they can go back to their home. What we want to do is get people to live in peace. So stay in the shelter while you get some counseling and while you start to work things out. There's nothing wrong with that. And what must it be like for these people, the kids who hear this? The impact on children is huge. First, it's generational. If you grow up in abusive situations, it's more likely you're going to be in one. If you watch your dad hit your mom all the time, to you that's normal. If you're a little girl and you watch your mom get hit all the time, to you that's normal. So the generational cycle is huge. Also, you're going to see their school. How can a kid watch his mom and dad fight all night and then go to school and listen? How? It's not going to happen. You're going to get bad behaviors at school and teachers aren't going to understand. Why is this kid either sleeping at his desk or why is he the big troublemaker?
So kids are going to have all kinds of reactions that just aren't healthy. And what about the other members of the family? Animals. Animal abuse is tied very closely to domestic violence. We're putting a dog kennel in the new shelter. I want people to, A, not stay home because they say if I leave, he'll kill the dog. Bring the dog with you. Plus, pets are very therapeutic for kids. I want them to have their pets if they can with them. So where did this all begin? Going back to me, going back to why I'm here. Those values. Every time I talk to a victim, every time a new person walks in, every time my staff members are in front of me, I try to remember to see things with his eyes, to hear things with his ears, to speak with his words, and to love with his heart. We've all been called. Every single person in this room has been called to do those same things. We've been taught, do unto others. We've been taught we're supposed to be serving one another. We've been taught to use the gifts that God gave us to serve others. We've been told whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. The most important commandment of all, just love others. And in this year, we've all been challenged to the corporal acts of mercy. It's perfect for the shelter. We're sheltering homeless, we're clothing naked, we're giving food to people who are hungry, and we're comforting the sick. You can do those things. You can do those things very simply. You can do them for one another. It's not just about the shelter, but it's about what we do for every single person in our lives. My mom was supposed to be here today. She's sick. Both of my sisters already have stopped over, have brought her things. That's the exact same thing as I'm doing at the shelter. Don Finn, running IBH. First thing he did when he got that job, he went and lived in IBH for a week to see what it was like. Really getting to know what other people are going through. But I think this is also important. Accepting help is important too. We have to let other people be his eyes and his ears and his words and his love. It's very hard for me to allow someone else to serve me. That's important because other people have to get to heaven too. So I think we all have to open ourselves up and allow us to be served. We were taught this by the best teacher of them all. He was served. He didn't just serve. He was served. He was taken care of. We can do that too. I want to show you a 90-second video. And while I'm showing you that, because it's going to give you a little insight to the shelter, I'm going to have my sister give each of you a little teeny remembrance of today. This is a little bracelet. You've seen them all. This one says, his eyes, his ears, his words, and his heart. So I hope that you all take this today, and if you don't wear it, at least put it in your car. Keep it somewhere where you see it every now and then, so that you're reminded of that also.
Shelter does that people don't realize. Last year alone, over 24,000 nights of sheltering were provided. But instead of just telling you about it, I'd like to take you to the shelter and show you where we're at right now. We're standing in one of the bedrooms at the current shelter. Now, can you imagine this is the worst day of your life? Someone you love has just hurt you. But you're in a room with 8 inches between beds. You're in a room that's got a window leaking air, that's got paint falling off the walls. Not many people get to see this, but this is what's called the penthouse at the Battered Women's Shelter. It was a great old Victorian home in its time, but now this attic serves as home to no less than 9 individuals each and every night of the year. Can you imagine climbing up 27 steps with a hefty bag filled with all the clothing you could grab on your way out the door? And then we tell you, here's your bed, and there's where your child can sleep, 20 inches away from a stranger. The penthouse has been great. It served its purpose for a lot of years. But we knew we had to do something more. As you can see, we're right in the middle of the construction project to open the new 40,000 square foot Battered Women's Shelter, now called the Center for Hope and Healing. We just came from the current shelter where you saw the overcrowding, no room for male victims, no room for teenage male victims. It's just not right. People can't recover and heal in that kind of environment. But imagine if I told you were going to be staying in the Harmony Suite. And then on the day that you're feeling terrible about yourself, I show you the room that you and your children are going to move into. You walk into a room that has respect and dignity and color. You're able to parent your own children. You're able to put them to bed and sit and do some computer work. It's just a better environment for somebody to feel better about themselves, to start to make some of the difficult decisions that they have to make about their future, but all in a place that affords them the respect that they deserve.
That's a little. That's a little glance at the new Center for Hope and Healing. We received that building for free. I saw a little ad in the Beacon Journal about 10 years ago that said the Department of the Navy was going to close down their building over on Dan Street, and if you had an idea for it, send it to them. So I wrote to the Navy and I said, I got two very old shelter buildings. If you would give me that building, I'll turn it into a newer shelter. And about 6 years later, the Navy called and said, you can have it. So I said, thank you very much. So they gave me that building, and then Mayor Pasquilla called me and said, I would like to have that building. And I said, that's fine. What's in it for me? And he said, well, go find another building. I'll help you get it. So we looked and looked and looked and looked, and Middlebury Manor was going out of business, the old nursing home Middlebury Manor. So Mayor Pasquilla said, go look at that building, and if you think it'll work, we'll work with them and we'll get it for you. So I traded for the Dan Street building, for the Middlebury Nursing Home. We started raising the money. We're close. Never in my social work school did I ever learn how much construction cost. But we're close now. We had to raise about $3 million. We've raised about $2.5 million. And you know, we did it through people like you. We did it through everyday donors. We didn't go to the large pots out there. They're asked all the time to give and give and give and give and give. But what I found is through my 20 years at the shelter, it's people like you, like me, that when I say we're out of toilet paper, we need school supplies, we've got a preemie that needs special food, people just step up. People just say, okay. So we have allowed people to put their name on anything in that building they want, from, you know, the showers, the bathrooms, the beds, the toys, the kids' room, and people are proud of it. They're like, they feel a part of it. And I think in years to come, long after I'm gone, somebody will be able to say, you know what, you paid for that suite number 117, Mrs. Johnson just moved out, the suite needs new blankets, and people are going to go, I'll get them. I'll stop and pick up some blankets today and get them down to you. Because we can. And when we are called to give something we can, we give. This is one of the best counties in the world
for giving and supporting its social services when they are fiscally responsible, and I think we have been. St. Hilary's is stepping up this summer. They're going to run a campaign to help us raise the money for the playground. So Father has very generously allowed me to speak at every Mass one weekend in July, and I said to him recently, you know, how many people are really going to be listening after communion? And he said, oh no, you're speaking as the homilist. I said, what? What? So it will be a very special occasion at St. Hilary's for me, going back, you know, and being there for that. I was the very first communion distributor in Summit County, lay minister when I was 17, Father Horning did it, and I will tell you, for about six Sundays, no one came to me. Now I've gone back and said to my mom, what? Why didn't you come? But St. Hilary's has always been in my heart, so they're going to raise this money to help us with our playground. We're still raising money for the dog kennel. We're still raising money for the security cameras outside. I don't want it to look like a prison, but we are going to need good security down there. We're raising money for the kitchen still. The nursing home kitchen, I'm looking at Dave, but the nursing home kitchen was in the basement, and we found out through architects and engineers that's no good anymore. The exhaust systems don't work, and how was I going to feed people on the second and third floors when it's in the basement? So we actually are going to have to do a little extra work to get the kitchen down there. But so we're still raising some money, and but I believe it's out there. I believe it's in our community, and I didn't come here to ask you for that today. But if it's in your heart and if it's in your head, you can always find us. I mean, that's not a hard thing to do. So if you support other organizations, I'm sure they're just as grateful for everything you can do, because every one of us is trying to do those four values that I talked to you about today. Do you want to collect their questions, or?
Yeah, we'll do questions now.
Okay.
Okay.
Where do you want me to wait, over here?
I'd like to thank Terry for her insights about family violence, intervention, and faith. If you can share applause with me and thank her. It sounds like we certainly have a lot of work ahead of us, and we certainly appreciate Terry's leadership. Please take a moment to write down your questions and then hold them up so that our volunteers can come around and pick them up. While you're doing that, we have a few announcements. Our next First Friday Club Luncheon will be here at Tangiers on Friday, July 8th, as we welcome Sandra Pianalto, speaking on My Catholic Education Served Me Well. She's the former president and chief executive officer of Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. I wanted to note that she originally was scheduled to speak in November, but she's agreed to come in July for us. If you're listening to the podcast on our website, we invite you to join us in person. You can make reservations in three ways. You can send a check for $20 to the First Friday Club, 295 Russell Avenue, Akron, Ohio, 44307. You can call our phone number at 330-535-7668 each month. If you sign up on a monthly basis, please let us know by the Tuesday before the Friday talk. And for those of you who are physically present, on the tables there are subscription sheets for the speaker series, offering a variety of subscription options. Please take a subscription form with you and consider making this speaker series a consistent part of your spiritual and intellectual growth. You can hear a podcast of the previous speaker's presentations as well by logging onto the website. Please consider recommending it to a friend. You can also keep up to date by joining us on Facebook. Please take the time to fill out the orange information cards on the table so that we can add you to our email list. And at this time, I want to recognize any first-time attendees. So if you're here for the first time, if you'd like to stand, and we can recognize you. All right, you're all coming back. That's great. The First Friday Club board members, if you'd like to stand. Okay, were you ready for questions and answers?
This is fairly easy. What happens if someone doesn't have a way to get to the shelter? Can they get transportation? How do they find you?
Yes, they can get transportation. Our drop-off point is actually City Hospital Emergency Room. And for those of you that don't know, City Hospital has an underground path that goes across the street to the old, what was it, a nursing school years ago?
Yeah.
And so if an abuser follows somebody, they actually are coming out a different door. The abuser can sit in the parking lot for hours. But the police will transport, and then we have a code with a taxi company, and they know that's our code. If we use it, they bring the person directly to shelter.
Can you speak about what kind of help is available for the abusers?
Absolutely. And I had about 20 slides in my presentation today about the abuser, and when I was trying to cut it down, I had to cut it somewhere. So our agency has never started the abuser treatment programs, but there are some good ones in the area that go from anger management counseling programs all the way up to a two-year probationary program that continues to track the person and try to help them actually change their behaviors. The offender programs are still being looked at. I know some of them are being done right through our drug and alcohol treatment programs also, where those two are tied together. You got to get sober before we can get you to even look at these issues. So there are offender programs out there. My agency just hasn't gotten them, but we've actually gotten calls from people who have said, I need help. And we've hooked them up with programs where they can go to begin to get some healing for their side.
Do you have a need for clothing, toys, household goods, all those kind of things like that? And what are they, and how do folks get those to you?
Right now, because of the construction, we've kind of curtailed back on what we can take in. Usually, once we reopen again, we'll start to take in anything that you use in a normal house. So everything, when you get new towels, give us your old ones. When you get new sheets, give us your old ones. You need a new lamp, give us your old one, if it's still working. Toys are a little bit harder. Sometimes people give us toys, and they really are missing parts and broken and things like that. And we get a lot of new toys. So we don't always, stuffed animals we can't take because of bed bugs. So unfortunately, we don't take those. We might get a hot box, and then we can, because if you heat things up enough, you'll kill the bed bugs. So we might be able to start taking stuffed animals in the future. We will have some information in all bulletins when we're ready to start taking donations, in-kind donations again. Right now, we're just taking products that people use, anything from cough and cold medicine, toilet paper, diapers, those kinds of usable things. But we've really cut back on the in-kind for now. Correct, Polly? She's our donation coordinator. Those were easy. That was it? That's all you got? Oh, cell phones. We take all used cell phones. We send them away. They come back to us all programmed, and we use them for emergency phones for the victims who don't have a phone, so that they would always have one in their car with them.
All right. Thank you again. I want to thank everybody for coming, and we'll see you next month, July 8th, for Sandra Pianalto. We will be right back here at Tangiers. At this time, I'd like to introduce Melissa Hamlin, who will lead us in the closing prayer.
Our closing prayer, Learning Christ. Teach me, my Lord, to be sweet and gentle in all the events of life and disappointments and the thoughtlessness of those I trusted, and the unfaithfulness of those on whom I relied. Let me put myself aside to think of the happiness of others, to hide my little pains and heartaches, so that I may be the only one to suffer from them. Teach me to profit by the sufferings that come across my path. Let me so use them that it may make me patient, not irritable, that it may make me broad in my forgiveness, not narrow, haughty, and overbearing. May no one be less good for having come within my influence, no one less pure, less true, less kind, less noble for having been a fellow traveler in our journey toward eternal life. As I go my rounds from one distraction to another, let me whisper from time to time a word of love to thee. May my life be lived in the supernatural, full of power for good, and strong in its purpose and sanctity. Amen.